shares, the market, the S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that has done something Shane Warne has never done. We have reached a century despite all predictions and expectations.
Cue the applause, cue the music. Thank you, Mum.
We made it, mate.
We did.
I'm Andrew Page, and with me is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Phils. Who is Shane Warne, Andrew?
He played some kind of sport, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a sportser.
Sportser. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I knew he had something to do with that. Today on the podcast, Elon Musk gives it to the analysts.
There we go. Your favourite man.
My favourite man. Save us, Elon. Banks are on the nose again. Oh. We'll talk a bit about that. Servcorp and signs of a bubble. This relates to the whole WeWork phenomenon.
Ah, WeWork just quickly is.
It's a shared office business.
Sounds very millennial.
And very millennial. Think all foosball, right. Tables, think beanbags, think hipster beards.
No, yeah, there you go. See, foosball and beanbags kind of Gen X, but that was us in the dot-com boom.
Okay.
They moved on now. It's all skinny jeans.
Man, if you're expecting me to have my finger on the pulse with what the cool and trendy people are doing, you are very much mistaken. Oh. We're also going to open up a mailbag too. And if there's time, and hopefully there won't be, Scott gets on his high horse.
Oh, there'll be time.
But plus, mate, because it is our 100th episode, and we don't want to be too self-indulgent. We'll be a little bit self-indulgent. We're not too self-indulgent. We're going to do a special PS where we're going to talk about all the things that we crapped on about over the previous 100 episodes.
It's pretty much a version of a brag book for our mothers. So
pretty
no one
much.
Else needs to listen, but if you do find yourself without ability to turn it off, you will hear our PS at the end.
There you go. But first. Elon Musk, the man who's saving the planet and, in fact, colonizing Mars and reinventing the energy landscape and creating tunnels under Los Angeles and selling flamethrowers and revolutionizing vehicles and just basically doing everything.
Andrew, you would have a slight man crush on Elon, wouldn't
you? I have a huge man crush on Elon, even though I know he's just a little bit crazy, which is why I love him so.
Speaking of episode 100, long-term listeners may recall once upon a time I said to you, Andrew, are you a Holden man or a Ford man? And you replied,
I'm a Tesla man.
There we go. Now you get a chance to talk about the man himself.
So
the brains behind, the massive brain behind Tesla, SpaceX, Solar City, a whole lot of cool
stuff. The Boring Company, B-O-R-I-N-G, a whole bunch. He's one of the original.
The same way no matter what.
I realized that after I was halfway through.
Boring as in digging holes. Boring, get it?
Yeah. Now I've gone blank too. What's the vacuum train?
Company? Oh, the Hyperloop.
He had some fingers in that as well. He's one of the original PayPal guys, which is where he first made his fortune. Doubled down on that on a bunch of other ventures and just continues to, you know, the dice just can fall in his favor.
All right, enough about Elon.
You know, dreamy blue eyes, everything. You know, he's just awesome. And anyway, so Tesla had their quarterly results out last night, and they weren't that good. It's the biggest quarterly loss he's ever made. There's a lot of people out there in the financial community wondering if Tesla will actually be around in the future because they are burning through cash at a rate of knots. They have a huge amount of debt.
There's actually a Bloomberg page that actually counts the amount of money Tesla's burning just while you're reading that particular article about Tesla burning cash.
Bloomberg just loved to put the boot Elon. And what was fascinating about it was that, and so the analysts were on there asking a bunch of questions, and Elon just basically saying things like, those questions aren't cool. Next, you know, if you can't handle the volatility, sell our stock. It was just really dismissive. In fact, shut off the analyst call and went to YouTube to take calls from fanboys like myself on, tell us again, Elon, why you're so great, which he was more than happy to answer.
I think you're wonderful, Elon. What do you think?
What do you think?
So Elon shuts it down by saying, we're going to go to YouTube. Sorry, these questions are so dry, they're killing me. which is not exactly what you expect from a corporate CEO who's burning cash at a million miles an hour and is going to need some more money, probably.
So it was really fascinating. It tends to get all the Wall Street types offside. You know, they have a very self-inflated sense of self. And, you know, when you have a CEO of a $50 billion plus company telling them to get stuffed and, you know, I don't want to talk to you.
Here's another question. And so where specifically would you be in terms of capital requirement? Elon says, these questions are not cool. Next.
Not cool. And so anyway, it's been kind of interesting and funny. Yeah. Of course, after he sort of spat the dummy, shares in Tesla fell almost 5% afterwards.
That kind of happens when you thumb your nose at the entire Wall Street, right?
Well, and it's kind of, so it's, you know, it's getting a lot of talk and it's all sort of very funny. But from another angle, it's not exactly, there's a, and this isn't just being the fanboy in me speaking.
Well.
There is, There is, well, it's a little bit, but I actually got some sympathy with that. In fact, Regeneron's CEO, he followed suit recently. Yes. You'll have to tell me what the hell Regeneron does.
It regenerates.
Regenerates. Okay, cool. Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah. Len Schiffler,
yes.
Speaking to analysts on a post-earnings conference call, he shrugged off questions on possible acquisition and drug price increases. I must be a drug company, I assume. Adding it that it's not his company's job to provide guidance to the street. Quote, that's kind of what you guys are overpaid for.
You guys are overpaid for.
End quote.
Exactly.
Which we thought was good. And it touches on this broader question of where does a CEO's responsibility lie when it comes to telling analysts what to expect. So one half of the argument goes, guys, that's your job. You're paid to analyze. You analyze. If you have to come up with new term price targets, you go for it. My job as the steward of this company is to ensure that I'm allocating capital sensibly. I'm growing long-term wealth for my shareholders. Yep. I'm not gonna do your job for you. I've actually got some sympathy for that. The other side of the argument is, well, this is a public company. Analysts are sort of the people that can ask the smart questions and make sure that the market is as informed as possible, and that they've got a right to ask a lot of these questions.
Yeah.
Where do you sit on this spectrum?
I think your point is dead right. That's kind of they are two sides of the same coin, and it's kind of funny, you know. I think I'm kind of split. We both like Elon Musk. The guy is a genius, an enigma, and he's going to do it his way. And kind of, if you're investing in Tesla, you kind of get that. And on one level, we kind of look at Elon and go, haha, that's kind of funny. Geez, we hope you know what you're doing. And that's kind of where it falls down, right? Is at one level, if Enron had said back in the day, well, that's not our job, you guys do it.
Yeah.
We would have said rightly, well, hang on, that's not enough transparency for investors. And when it all blew up, we'd point up to that and say, if we had more transparency, then we could have known more. And I think that's the transparency question is really where I'm somewhere in the middle on this. I know that's a pretty unsatisfactory answer, but I don't think the companies need to give. In fact, I would, if it was up to me, have no company ever give guidance. If I was CEO tomorrow for a day, I would say, I'm not going to give you any more guidance at all. You're just not having it. Yeah. I'm not going to do it because there's no point. Otherwise, I manage to guidance. I'm worried about the short term, to your point, rather than the long term.
Yeah.
That's a really crappy way to run a business. So I would say no guidance, absolutely. As to whether you kind of say, hey, that question's not cool, I don't want to answer it, that's where I kind of fall down a little bit on the analyst side. Not because they, you know, most of them want to put a number in a spreadsheet for next quarter, which is also crappy. But if you got a decent question from a decent shareholder representative in one form or another, I do kind of feel like if you're going to have a call like that, it's not unreasonable to answer those questions to give people more insight. Of course, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger famously sit around in a sports stadium for 6 hours and take questions from all comers.
Yep.
And so you kind of think, well,
but they don't answer all questions.
Well,
we've been there.
They let them answer any questions.
And this is where the nuance lies. So I think CEOs, Elon, Buffett, the rest have every right to tell an analyst go take a hike if the question is stupid. So if the analyst wants to ask a question about the important questions about understanding the business, where it's at and where it's going over a material time frame, I think they're very legitimate questions that the shareholders and the market have every right to know and ask. And that's where I think, and as a CEO, you do have a duty to communicate to the market and let people make the best informed decision that they can about your company.
Yeah.
When you get questions, how many analyst calls have we been on? Where you know, there's always some idiot.
Great quarter, guys.
So
can you give me more color on the gross margin before costs and after expenses?
You just want to put a drill to your temple. It's all of these stupid questions about what's going to happen next 3 weeks or so. So I think there's somewhere in between all of that. We will watch with interest in terms of what happens with Tesla.
Because you will have more interest than I will.
It's going to be fascinating. It's either they are going to go on to do wonderful things, or they may not be around. It's binary. It really is.
And that's it. If I care about Tesla at all, it's not because of Elon, unlike you, Andrew. But it's straight out. If Elon Musk screws this up, if his hubris kills the company in one form or another, it sets electric cars back a couple of decades. And frankly, from an environmental perspective, again, regardless of your view on climate change, I desperately hope he succeeds, because a world where we have only electric cars is a cleaner, greener world. That's got to be a good thing. And so if his experiment fails, you can pretty much bet that most of the car companies go, thank God that's over, let's go back to making
internal combustion engines. There's less incentive to go down that path.
Exactly. I agree.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Hey, now I'm going to ask you a question this time, mate. You wrote a really interesting piece for your members this week, and unfortunately we can't republish the whole thing, but you talk to your members about the banks. And we've talked a little bit about banks, spoiler alert for later in the podcast, talked a little bit about banks over our last 100 or so episodes, or exactly 100 episodes, funnily enough.
Yep.
And you raise a few interesting points. The banks have not done as well as we'd like. Maybe they're in sort of value-ish territory. Just give us a quick potted view. I know we talk about banks a little bit, but hey, they're 40% of the index and most of our listeners will own one or more of them. So just give me a quick redux on what you wrote about the banks this week.
Well, so I've been running this thing called Motley Fool Dividend Investor for 4 years now, and it's been a very remarkable absence of the banks on the scorecard.
Indeed.
When you ask the man in the street, give me a classic dividend paying stock, people are going to say the big four banks. And that's not unreasonable. I mean, in fact, these companies, CBA in particular, have just delivered such phenomenal long-term wealth for their shareholders. Mm. And a big part of those returns have come in the forms of dividends. Very strong, reliable, fully franked dividends paid each and every year, and an almost every year increasing by a very decent clip.
Yeah.
So it is a very notable absence. So 3 years ago, around about this time in 2015, I wrote a two-part series to our members trying to sort of explain my position. It wasn't that I have anything against the banks, in particular, though they've certainly got their issues. But, you know, there's no ideological, I'm not coming from any ideological standpoint. But what was interesting was there was a two-pronged argument. The first was I didn't see any value in the bank. So we've talked a lot before about having a wonderful company, but, you know, if you pay too much for it, you're going to do very poor you know, you might have the best corner shop in the world. It ain't worth $10 billion, right? no matter how strong your profits
grow.
Under
the counter.
You know, and even then. So I had a question in terms of value. The other thing was, and I guess the other side of the coin of that was, how are these things going to grow? We've had, you know, decades of this phenomenal strong growth that was driven by these big structural factors, which again, I'm not going to get into too much here, but, you know, the dual income family, interest rates falling to historic lows, a phenomenal lift in property prices, et cetera, that everything that could work in the bank's favor was working in the bank's favor. And that's what drove it up. And so it wasn't a question of saying that's all going to collapse in a steaming pile, but extrapolating that trend was just mathematically impossible.
Right.
So, I don't want to do a victory lap here because, you know, we know that investments take many, many years to play out. And anyone who bought 3 years ago may still be validated in that. But for what it's worth, shares are down in the big banks between about 22 and 27% over that period.
I think Commonwealth Bank's about off 25% from its high of 2015, from memory.
And that's a three-year period, right? And none of them, except for CBA, have increased. They've all had flat dividends. I think ANZ actually cut their dividends a little bit.
Yeah.
So it was a view that sort of seem to have been proven more or less right so far. But I thought I'd revisit all... It's a very long wind-up. I thought I'd revisit all of that because the problem that we have in our game, we talk about it a lot, is you form a view and then we just tend to stick to it because that's what humans do.
Right.
So I thought, let's go back and dust off that spreadsheet and see whether a lot of that holds true.
Come on, get to the end of it. What did you find?
So what was interesting, when you look at things like a price-to-earnings ratio or a price-to-book ratio, so the price relative to how much money it earns or the price relative to how much its assets are worth, they're actually at really, really low levels, lower than they've been for a long, long time, which is surprising to me. Obviously, the price has come back, so the value has almost by definition improved.
Right.
And so it was like, I just didn't expect the extent to it. So then it became the question of, well, maybe now is the time to buy. However, on the other side of the equation, it's a very long answer, mate. I'm sorry. And this is the short version too, believe you me.
You're okay if I go and grab a drink?
I'll come back in 20 minutes.
Right.
Is that I think a lot of those factors over growth actually haven't improved. In fact, they've gotten worse.
Okay.
So for me, although the value is a lot more compelling, you're looking at 6% fully franked yields on these dividend stalwarts.
Okay.
I still think, though, that now is not the time to buy. But I would say this, though, for people who have held, and a lot of people out there in this camp have held shares for 10 years plus, I wouldn't be rushing to sell anytime. Right. So there's huge tax consequences there. You know, if they're going to sit along in the bottom drawer, you'll be fine. But if you've got fresh capital to invest today, not for me.
I'm going to do my usual thing and try and summarize what I think you just said in a little bit shorter amount of time frame. I think what I heard you say
I'm not concise. I do realize
The price has fallen about 20-25%, which is good.
Yep.
The business,
depending on your perspective,
if you're looking to potentially buy, the business quality's kind of eroded slightly because growth prospects have dimmed a little.
Yep.
but that gap is still too big between quality and price to justify buying the shares right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially in terms of what's being uncovered with the Royal Commission and what regulatory changes might have, what structural changes there might be to the bank. We talked the other week about how they're splitting off a lot of their wealth management arms. So a lot of these income-generating units are going to go tighter regulatory scrutiny. Again, not, we'll get into this in the PS, but you know, one of my favorite hobby horses is the property market, and property has been coming down. So that driver of credit demand is not there at the moment.
Yeah.
And so it's just hard. It's hard to sort of see where this growth is going to come from and justify the price lower though that it is now.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Real money advice from real people, not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Speaking of companies that are on the dividend investor scorecard,
yes,
a little company called Servcorp.
So after I did my victory lap and how smart I was to avoid the banks,
this isn't really the reason I'm asking, but go on.
But no, look, full disclosure, this is the game that we're in. There's a company out there called Servcorp, ASX code SRV.
Hey.
And what these guys...
Episode 100, we're finally onto that, aren't we?
We actually remember
Liam is a very proud father right now.
These guys do shared offices or communal offices, mm-hmm. but you basically... They buy some property, they fit it out with a bunch of office type equipment, you can rent a small space of that. These guys invented the concept, believe it or not, globally. And they've been doing it for many, many, many decades. The guy who founded it is still at the helm. They own a squillion shares. Mm. It's always paid consistent dividends. It's a cyclical business, but they've got mountains of cash, $100 million in cash for a business that is worth about $400 million on the market. To give you a scale of how strong that, zero debt, of course. So I liked it. I liked it as a dividend play. What happened, of course, is that there's this other phenomenon out there called WeWork, which you might have been living under a rock, but they're doing the same thing. But this has sort of come out of America. It's kind of come out of this sort of Silicon Valley kind of...
Sounds pretty cool.
You know, it's very... But the thing
I can't
is,
even feel the beards from here.
With this business, the growth has been phenomenal.
Right.
And because there is... These guys are attracting capital, like, you know... Bees to honey. They just get super, super, super cheap capital.
Right.
Like Amazon, in a way, like Elon, in a way, they're not worried about near-term profit. In fact, they are bleeding cash left, right, and center. And what's interesting about it is that when they report and they talk to their investors, they actually don't, they have all these funny metrics that they use to report. Right, so we're not interested in cash. We don't, that's so old fashioned, so 2010 to talk about cash and profits and the rest of it. What do they talk about instead?
Well, here's the thing. So they kind of do care about profits, except they just choose to define them their way.
Tomorrow's profits, maybe.
So it kind of harks back to the dot-com bubble a little bit. Mm-hmm. I did tweet during the week, if those who are following me on TMF Scott P, there's a nice little plug there, and you can follow Andrew on Sage underscore Simeon. I'll avoid you the question about why the hell. Anyway, so I did talk about these kind of dot-com-esque weird metrics that are coming out. There was kind of, you know, it was all about the eyeballs, of course, in the dot-com.
Yep.
Groupon, remember Groupon, the group buying site?
I do.
It launched with a version of profit that basically excluded all of its costs, and it was kind of, you know, profit before costs, which we used to call sales.
Sales or revenue.
Yeah. Yep. Now, so WeWork has community-adjusted EBITDA.
Community. Nope. So you adjust earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization, and community expenses.
Well, that's kind of it, right? So not only are you removing interest and tax and deduction and amortization, you're also moving those pesky things like general and administrative expenses and marketing expenses, development costs.
Okay. Well, that's...
So, you know, if you could run a company that was a property company without any property costs and without having to market it because you're a marketing business, and you don't have to have any selling or administrative expenses because they're not really cost. You don't really pay those people. So, it's madness. And unfortunately, and this is kind of where I'm a little bit mindful, I've been a little bit kind of vocal about people being very careful now. If we are heading for something resembling a market pullback, crash, drop, fall, whatever you want to call it, correction or something else, if we are heading down that path, it may well be that these sorts of metrics are indicative that we're in a little bit of
frothy. It's a frothy territory. It's bubbly.
Exactly.
It's bubbly at the moment.
Like bubbles are nothing to make it really something, as Aero would tell us, for those who are old enough to remember those ads. And that's kind of the challenge. When companies are reporting those with a straight face, and frankly, when the market's kind of lapping them up and going, haha, that's a bit funny, but you still have our money, you've got to be a little bit careful here that the sort of market valuation of WeWork assumes a hell of a lot goes right, compared to a
assumes
like
that they can continue to attract capital to allow them. So you can do it. They can do it forever as long as there's enough people prepared to say we believe you, and give them more money to continue, you know, to support operations because bills do need to be paid.
Yes.
And where it's all fascinating is that this is actually having a big impact on Servcorp. Their US operations are really struggling. They gave a profit downgrade the other day. Shares came back about 15% or so. And so the question we were sort of talking about over breakfast is this is either an incredible buying opportunity or this is a good sign to get out because, you know, this could get worse if WeWork continue to really tighten the screws there. What was fascinating is that Servcorp, the day after this, announced that they were going to buy back up to 5% of their shares with this huge pile of cash. So again, reducing the number of shares on issue, concentrating those remaining shareholders, it has an effect to increase things on a per share basis.
Right, and it should be the task taken by a company that sees its shares as undervalued because it's buying back cheap shares and adding value to the people who still own after that process.
For what it's worth, I still think it is a buy. I mean, these guys have operations in a lot of places outside of the US. Yep. They are very profitable. They have been for a long, long time. I still think it's good. It just really sucks that things took the turn that they have. But again, these things don't play out immediately. Mm. So when you sort of look out 5-10 years, is this company around? Is it earning more than it is today? Does that price represent an accurate reflection of that earnings power? I think the answer is yes, for what it's worth.
I will add one more last thing, which I say relatively regularly, which is you can only be as profitable as a business as your least rational competitor allows you to be. And that's exactly what's hitting Servcorp right now. They compete with someone who doesn't want to make money, and your competitor's margins are effectively zero or less than zero. It's very, very hard to keep business running. And that's exactly the Amazon story, as you say, Andrew.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's open up the mailbag.
Let's.
We got a really good question from the steady investor on Twitter, @Bogle_investor.
We don't have a sound effect for the opening of the mailbag. I'm a little bit disappointed, Liam.
That's more like a coffin, I suppose. Question for the podcast. Healthscope, by the way, ASX code HSO.
Hey, hi.
Doing it again.
Look at you.
These guys own some private hospitals. They own some pathology labs, and I think they own a few medical centers as well. And they're around about $2 or so, a little bit under. And then all of a sudden they got this takeover offer from a group called BGH Capital, a consortium of people there. And BGH said, we're prepared to pay $2.36.
Hey, hey.
Fantastic.
That's a free 15%.
Now, when you've got someone out there, a very serious buyer who says, I will pay $2.36.
You sell for $2.36.
And shares are available on the market at $2.
That's good.
Doesn't take a Warren Buffett to work out that I could buy at $2 and then sell to this mob for $2.36 when the takeover goes through.
They're really at $2 for long once the takeover's announced.
It pops very, very, very quickly.
Right, right.
So, yeah, you can't really play that game. It's like you're lucky enough to be Johnny on the spot when it happens.
You either own them or you don't.
But here's the question from the steady investor. He goes, so on the back of that news, remember the bid was $2.36. Bargain. On the back of that news, shares jumped from $2 to $2.48.
What?
Why would the market pay $2.48 for something that in a couple of months is likely to be worth $2.36? I thought it was an excellent question.
Yes.
You do see it from time to time. More often than not, interestingly enough, shares actually traded a little bit of a discount. So if the takeover offer was going through at $2.36, a sensible market might actually pay $2.32 or something like that. Two reasons. One, there's a risk that the takeover doesn't go through.
So there's a risk kind of discount put in there?
Risk discount. And the other thing is we talked about it a lot. In fact, there's this time value of money. Even if it's guaranteed to go through, well, it doesn't make sense for me to pay $2.36 now just to get this same back in a few months' time.
If you've got to wait for 6 months, the market goes up at 10% a year, you're giving up some upside
I get interest in the bank just by sitting. So I need a little bit of a discount to make that wait worthwhile,
Makes sense.
But what's less obvious is when it goes above this. Now, the short answer is it's because the market believes that there's going to be another offer. There's going to be what existing shareholders love. It's great when you're in this position, isn't it? When there's a bit of a
bidding war,
Favorite phrase. And there's two parts. It's like at an auction, right? When there's one person at an auction, you know they're going to do well. The seller's not going to do too well. When there's two people who really want that house, the seller is just rubbing their hands because they're going to bid each other up and up and up and up and up. And that's what the market is thinking is going to happen here. The speculation from Canadian giant Brookfield Private Equity, which is looking to take a tilt at all of this.
You're not going to sell the first. You're not going to sell the first offer in an auction, are you?
You're not. Unless that's what the market's that's what the market's bet is at the moment. So what do you do in this situation?
Take the money and run.
You do?
Oh yeah. Takeovers are funny things, you know. The shares, look, if you're very lucky and someone's giving you this much money, the reality is that if there's no second bid that turns up, the shares fall to at least 236.
Yes.
And if both bidders walk away, as has happened with Fairfax and Vocus last year,
many times,
the shares could fall back 20, 25% from here. So you've got to ask yourself, do I really want, do I feel lucky, punk, is the first thing you ask yourself, as we all know. But once you've answered that question, the next question is, have I fight? No. 5, 6, 5, 5, 6. Anyway, the next question you ask after those two is you know, is it really worth the upside? So if I hang on at 248, maybe I get 250, 255, right? Maybe. So maybe there's another 5% on the table, give or take.
Yeah.
If the downside is 25, 30%, as an investor, you've got to be looking at that and going, how many times do I want to toss a coin that's loaded against me and hope it keeps landing on heads? Because the reality is that even if the odds are likely it goes ahead at a higher price, the possibility that it doesn't, you end up with a Fairfax and a Vocus and then a Healthscope that does go ahead at a higher price. Overall, for my money, you take the money off the table.
Risk,
you
know, versus
bird in the hand,
reward.
Two in the bush, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, I think
there's just
right.
not enough upside potential left. Generally, Healthscope might go to $3 for all I know.
Yep.
But as a matter of course, if I do this 10 times, I would bet that I'll be better off taking the bid rather than waiting for a higher offer.
Yeah, and that's it. So normally when you're investing on the market, you're making you're taking this view on what the company is going to be doing, what it's worth. This is just a punt on what are the bidders going to do. The regulator going to allow it to go through? Is the board going to pass it and recommend it to shareholders? Are enough people going to accept? You've got to remember too that Healthscope's biggest shareholder is Australian Super, and the existing bid on the table prevents them from actually accepting a competing proposal. So don't forget, a proposal to be approved, you have to get a majority of shareholders voting, saying, yes, we want this to go through.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff at play here. So hopefully, the Steady Investor, this has answered your question as to why they are trading at a premium, as to what to do. I'd probably go with Scott. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Of course you'd go with me, man. That's the smartest thing you've ever said.
Oh,
look at that. That's a swish.
That was you asked for a sound effect. That's the issue being moved to the side.
There you go. Nice.
I like it.
And again.
That's a dangerous sound effect because there's a lot of issues that need to be moved to the side.
It's the hurry up, really, isn't it? For the love of God, you guys, will you please hurry up? I reckon what's been happening, you and I have been talking to each other. Liam's frantically over there going, move on, move on. It hasn't worked. He's like,
spam that button like crazy.
There we go. He's out of control now. Look out.
Get that man away from the
sound. Someone's giving him the sound library. We're in trouble.
All right. You know what? I was hoping that we'd run out of time. It looks like we do have a little bit of time,
yes!
My friend. It's that time again. Speaking of sound effects.
Speaking of sound effects.
What is your rant this week?
Oh, you know what I really, really get annoyed by? And it's the stuff that gets...
Tell me.
You don't sound generally about that. So this week, right, Emmanuel Macron, the French Prime Minister, and trust me, I'm getting back to investing here, was out in Australia. He met with Malcolm and Lucy Turnbull.
Yep.
And he said to Prime Minister Turnbull, it was a delight to spend time with you and your delicious wife, Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
And the mainstream media and most of Twitter blew up on the word delicious. Ha, delicious, delicious, get it, get it, get it. Mm. And it's like, for the love of God, people, is there nothing more important to talk about than what Macron said? Either he meant it or he didn't. It was either a nice compliment or it wasn't. Like, does it really, really matter? For all the stuff they talked about submarines and security contracts and bilateral negotiations, all the rest of that stuff, all we wanted to talk about is whether he used the word delicious or not.
You know what I think the media is not talking enough
absolutely
about?
Absolutely mad, tell me.
Is Kim Jong-un's private toilet.
Speaking of distractions, now here's the thing: if you,
it's the same example though, right? These massive historic
no
events.
About his private toilet.
Well, I thought there was a lot of coverage on it because he.
Maybe the site you've been reading.
Yeah, okay.
Can I have my high horse?
Sorry,
get off my horse.
Sorry.
All right. So here's the thing with investing, right?
Here's the longest bow that you'll hear this year.
It's been pulled longer. The reality is when people think about investing, they get distracted by the sideshows, the things that are happening right now. And again, a little bit of a hint, we'll go into this more in the PS.
Mm-hmm.
But there is so much distraction out there right now. GetSwift recently was one of those. And we talked about it and everyone talked about it. And 99% of the market isn't invested in GetSwift. And yes, it's interesting. And yes, it's worth talking about in passing. But we get distracted by the bright, new, shiny thing, the funny thing, the thing we can snigger at, the thing we get appalled by. And we miss the bigger picture stories. For all of the grief about what's going on, the things that actually need to happen, whether that's politics or investing or anything, economics, the distractions of look over here at this shiny thing. Pollies are great at it, right? Over here. If we can distract the populace enough to vote for us, we're in. In investing, it's exactly the same thing. If you get distracted by the cool thing, the exciting thing, the new thing, the topic du jour everyone's talking about, that's fine. And we'll talk again about some of those things later. But the reality as an investor is you've got to stay focused. You've got to stay focused on the main game, right? That's exactly the story. Crypto is exactly an example. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets distracted by it. Everyone's talking about it. Stay focused. Don't get distracted by the knuckleheads in the mainstream media or social media because they're all the same. Focus on what matters. not what people are talking about.
Very well said, my friend.
It's very kind of you.
That rounds off 100. Here's a question good, for you. Do we make 200?
I'm actually wondering if the last 99 have gone to air, quite frankly. May well be. They're still piloting us at this stage. Not sure. The good thing is our mothers will be very proud of us.
They will.
And that's the important thing. And our wives would be too if they did listen.
If they listen to it, then maybe they
would. Does your wife listen?
Of course not.
No, mine either.
She hears enough of me rants at home. She doesn't need to tune in to hear more of it.
Good point. If you want to start recording podcasts in the office, mate, it's probably better than having to come down to the studio. Given your propensity to rant.
Of course.
Run around us out, mate.
Here we go.
We should come up with something new.
We say that every week, but yeah. Before we go, don't forget you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast. You know what? I still have to read it. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
You think after 100 times I would know this off by heart?
You reckon our listeners are going, oh, God, guys, we know this. How can you not know this?
Just get to the point. Uh-huh. You can, now I've lost my spot.
So you said people could subscribe, and then I should say, and you should.
And you should.
There we go.
And if you like what we're doing, please give us a big fat 5-star rating on iTunes.
You say that every week, yes.
I do. And of course, if your friends or yourself could do with a bit more foolish straight talk, you can go to where can you go? Oh, yeah. You can go to what's our web address?
We probably should record this just so you can actually get it right every week.
Fool.com.au/, and then you go
Triple M.
Brilliant. Until next week, Fool on.
Fool on.
Value stocks.
Market. Stock market.
Index. Share market.
This is Motley Fool Money. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/Triple M.
Oh, look at that. Liam was on fire. We're going to roll straight into our PS, mate.
Yes, so the beloved PS.
Mum, thanks for listening is what we want to start with.
For those suckers who want, suckers for punishment, I should say. Let me just clarify that very quickly. It gives us a little chance to expound more on some of the stuff we want to talk about, but we run out of time of in the actual podcast proper. And what we thought we would do is, as we said in the podcast, was sort of reflect on some of the big issues that we talked about over the past 100 episodes.
And stay with us, Phils. This isn't going to be just a pure retrospective. There are no recorded pieces. Just some of the lessons and thoughts we've got from the last couple of years.
Well, you kind of touched on it on your high horse. I mean, it's a finance podcast. Whatever's in the news.
By the way, I put that in so people will keep listening to this.
Well, was that the grand plan, wasn't it? Genius.
I've never been accused of having a grand plan before, but it occurred to me as in passing that was good enough.
But it was a really good point because those things, I mean, we talked about them because, again, they were interesting.
Yeah.
They were sucking up a lot of oxygen, and yet now we just don't talk about them.
Yeah.
And, we're talking about something else. And whatever we're talking about now, we won't be talking about next year. I guarantee you. But I also guarantee you that a majority of companies that are out there will still be doing what they're doing, earning what they're earning, and, shareholders who are patient enough to sort of sit through this will be making a lot of money.
So if we're not going to be talking about it in a year, some we're talking about now, why bother talking about it now?
I think it's a good lesson. If
I can talk about it then, it's not worth talking about then. Why is it worth talking about now? That's what I can't work out.
Well, that's why we put in the PS. So
okay,
this is pure self-indulgence, my friend. That's why. So the first,
because we bloody well can.
Now, we haven't brought it up for a while. You probably haven't wanted to bring it up for a while. I'm going to ask you to open up your app, my friend.
Right.
And one of the things that we talked about ad nauseum was bloody Bitcoin, or crypto more broadly. So Ethereum, what was it, Litecoin?
Yes, Bitcoin Cash, Dogecoin.
There's 100 of the bloody things. And that was just phenomenal. And it really was a phenomenon. I mean, this thing went from, a few, whatever it was, cents to 20, Bitcoin got to $20,000.
Correct.
My gosh. Plus at one stage. What's it worth now?
Well, $12,719.47 as we record this.
So that's come back 40% or so?
Yeah, 40%.
And the interesting thing is here is that, I told you so. The other interesting.
Don't ask me how much money I've made so far.
Well, how much money have you made?
I'm up 70.5%, Andrew.
Can you sell?
No, don't be silly. if you're not sure the reference of that, go back to 25 podcasts. It wasn't funny.
Pick a random podcast. You'll get it.
Yes.
So that was a big, and just not talked about anymore. Talked about at all.
And that's the thing. Like if you plot even a Google search for these sort of terms, and again, this is kind of the theme of what we're about to say next, but the very concept of Bitcoin, it was exciting for a little while. It's all anybody wanted. There are people, they were doing the price on TV. It was about one or two articles a day on the Sydney Morning Herald.
I couldn't jump
Age.
Into a cab or an Uber without, the driver telling me about crypto.
Right. And so I think that's to some, people sold houses and God knows what to pay to buy those things.
Yeah.
It was the absolute only thing people want to talk about. It was supposed to be the next big thing.
Mm.
And like all next big things, Maybe it's not going to be.
Well, you always feel like the dinosaur when you're saying, well, I'm not investing in it.
You're missing out. And you see the price go up. This is the challenge, right?
And because these things play out over what feels like a long period of time. It's just going up and up and up and up and up. And you think, what have I missed? Now, the question isn't, you know, to be fully honest here, did I know it was going to come down? No, not really. It was a question of not knowing what's going to happen. Yep. And we say it all the time, and it's worth saying again and again and again, is that it's okay not to know.
Yep.
You know, your investing is about predicting the future. You are not going to know the vast, vast majority of times. It's about having the honesty with yourself to say, look, I've just got no way to know.
Right.
And if you don't know, don't do it, for God's sake. You don't have to. No one's holding a gun at your head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some things that, although you will never know for sure, that are far, far, far more, you can be far more confident in.
Right.
I know that Woolworths is going to be around in 10 years' time. I know that Telstra is going to be around in 10 years' time. We can argue about how much they're earning and what the price is and if that's fair. And that's very, 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 very good questions, by the way. But the odds of substantial loss are far, far, far smaller.
I think that's true. I think I'd probably take a broader lesson from that as well, mate. Whether the Bitcoin price was higher or lower than we talked about it is kind of partly the investment angle.
Mm.
The other angle from my point, again, back to the high horse a little bit, is just when everybody's talking about it, there's a pretty good chance that it's probably overblown. You know, it's the old thing.
Was it JP Morgan who said when the shoeshine boy is giving you stock tips, you know that the bubble's about to pop?
Right. So to some degree, again, it's not...
Maybe we replace shoeshine with Uber driver these days? Or...
That's right. No, stock tips with Bitcoin. Yeah. It's not that we knew it was going to pop, as you say, or we knew it was going to fall. Just the sense that it was what everyone wanted to talk about, and the history of those things, the history of the most important thing or the most talked about thing kind of actually coming to pass is really, really small. Remember, let's choose another couple. Amazon, right? Amazon was going to destroy retail.
We talked about that.
Didn't we?
Yeah, we came back to it a few weeks ago.
It was coming, it was coming.
Yep.
And look, Amazon's here, absolutely. But was it, you know, was it
no
likely
one talks about
to be,
it. Yeah.
Was it likely to be the ginormous impact, you know, big splash? No, I actually think it will actually take a decent bite out of retail eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of the thing of it's coming, and then all of a sudden it was a failure because it didn't work. And in neither of those cases was there any decent investing logic being put behind it, which is, it's a long-term company trying to build a long-term future in a market thing it's got some opportunity in.
Yeah.
It never expected to do the results that either the growth that was predicted nor the failure that was alleged to have come after the growth didn't turn up. It was entirely a media fiction.
This is the thing with all of these things. They aren't crazy. There is a nugget of truth in all of them, in the sense that, you know, Bitcoin is a really exciting technology. There's actually some pretty exciting use cases
for blockchain behind it.
I mean, I said at the time, I think it's fascinating. I think there's a future for all of that kind of stuff. There is a nugget of truth in all of this stuff that is valid to get excited about.
Right.
And it was valid to be worried about Amazon. It still is. But the reality was that we saw hundreds of millions of dollars wiped off the value of certain companies where it got to the point where it just got silly. Now, rather than be upset about this, just quietly, I actually love this about markets. I mean, this is where your opportunity comes as a sensible, level-headed, long-term investor, because you can look at something like Amazon and say, is that going to impact JB Hi-Fi? 100%. 100% is that going to impact it? Is it going to destroy them in the next 2 years? Probably not. And you can form a counter view that's actually well-reasoned while acknowledging the reality of the situation.
Right.
And therein lies the possibility.
Andrew, I'm going to give you one last chance because it's our 100th episode.
Mm-hmm.
What about house prices?
Well, we did talk. I talked a lot about property prices. And
listeners, as you may recall, I did try and stop him. Just so you don't blame us all equally, I did make an
effort. Here's the thing, though, right? It's not just me. This is every red-blooded Australian.
What have I done, Liam? What have I done?
Am I wrong, Liam? How many barbecues have you been to where some knucklehead hasn't been there talking about their 12 investment properties?
I don't know what barbecues you go to.
I'm only a little bit bitter because I missed that gravy train. And it became this. It still is to some extent.
Yep.
You talk about Bitcoin. I mean, it was just, there was a feverish attitude out there where property prices were going up at a rate of knots.
How I bought 20 investment properties under 18 is probably, again, like the Bitcoin and Amazon headlines, the sort of headlines you look at and go, you know what? That's probably not going to go well.
And this is the thing. It's not about, and this is where I think people have a lot of trouble with investing and the rest of it. It's not about knowing what's going to happen in the next. For all I know, we could have property prices up another 20% next year. It's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't like property as an investment right now based on the valuations, that's almost certainly going to happen because God hates me, and that's how these things
not
work.
Not just God, mate.
But when you sort of pan out and you say, well, price relative to rents or debt relative to income, all of these kind, what you choose your metric, whatever metric you want to choose, they're at levels that are unheard of historically in Australia and globally.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that things can't continue, but it makes it, you're stretching a rubber band, and every extra inch you pull that rubber band, it gets more taut and more taut and more taut. And at some point it's going to snap. You don't know exactly when, but at a point it is. Now, here's the
thing. This was supposed to be at the highlights of the 100 episodes, not a chance for you to rant again about the same thing. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, sorry, mate. Sorry. I know. I just caught myself. What's been interesting is that actually that has happened. We've seen prices come back a little bit, and it's not haha I was right, because things haven't crashed. But again, the more nuanced point is I never said things are definitely going to crash. It's certainly a possibility. The point is if you're buying an investment property, borrowing 90% of the funds, barely being able to afford the interest, in fact losing money because you're negatively geared,
he's off again,
on an expectation that things are going to compound, like double every 7 years, grow at 10%. Mathematically, that is not possible. You cannot extrapolate that forever before things go very, very wrong. So I think what I'm saying is that is a lesson that will happen again and again and again and again. But in the heat of the moment, you could not say that like saying the emperor has no clothes on when you sort of say that there's a lot of risk in property.
I think that's true. And again, thinking about the headline, this is kind of, to my mind, a story about the headlines. And the headlines were no one who was broking property was saying, well, It might be good, it might be bad, just be careful, but we think you should buy some. Mm. It's that sense that when everyone's all in on an issue, whether that's Bitcoin or Amazon,
it's that can't lose. You can't lose, which is what I had the issue with.
And when the general zeitgeist becomes so fully in one direction, it's just it's a pretty good indicator that the pendulum probably is about at full swing, give or take.
We also have this historical proof, like someone will do something that is not sensible but be rewarded for it.
Yeah.
It's like the bloke who goes down to Star City and puts all his money on black on the roulette and wins. Now he's just doubled his money. Did that mean he did something smart? No, because almost by definition, almost 50% of the time, that is going to work out very, very, very badly. So you can't. My kids did it all the time. You say, don't jump on the couch, you'll hurt yourself. And they jump on the couch and they don't hurt themselves.
So they told you.
You know, until they do.
I'm one of those too.
And it's really spurious reasoning. So again, it's not about, please don't write in any angry letters. I'm not against property per se as an investment.
P-A-G-E.
It's about having realistic expectations on the future and buying things at an appropriate level.
Mate, we're going to finish this off. Before I do finish, I want to thank you for hosting the last 100 episodes.
Thanks,
and I look forward to joining you for many, many more. I'm going to thank Liam Flanagan, our producer extraordinaire, who frankly, if we sound even half decent sometimes, it's all Liam. The times we sound shit are pretty much when we just sound shit. Liam, thank you very much for your time, effort, for the effort you put in not only producing the show, but actually making us sound better, pick topics better, improve our podcasting abilities such as we have.
Manage the egos.
Thank you very much for doing that, mate.
You're
we really
welcome.
Appreciate it. Thank you also to Mike Fitzpatrick from Triple M, who was the first bloke to give us a call and say, hey, do you guys think you could do a podcast? I said, I don't know, but we'll give it a go. And unfortunately, for you poor suckers who've been listening, this is the sad and sorry result. But thank you out there for listening to us, however many of you are, plus our mothers. We really do appreciate it. We hope you do enjoy it. We get some good feedback, so thank you. Please keep giving us your feedback of topics, ideas, what you like and don't like. As cliched as it sounds, we do this for our listeners. Otherwise, we're just two blokes talking crap into a microphone, which is probably not far from the truth anyway. So,
and we love a soapbox. Come on. Someone's given us a soapbox and we've said yes, please.
But we only have a soapbox because people keep listening. Otherwise, Fitz would have thrown us out weeks ago. So thank you for listening. Thank you to those who are supporting us and looking after us. And again, thanks for those who take time to correspond with us too. We very, very much appreciate it.
And thanks to you as well, mate. Very, very you, mate. Much appreciated.
It's been fun.
Andrew, can I give you a story that might put a smile on your face just quickly?
Oh, you know you can.
My brother-in-law, when you're talking about the Bitcoin, and this was over the last 100 episodes, this is the one that rang truest for me, because my brother-in-law got into the Bitcoin craze, got his money out, and managed to make some money out of it.
Good on him.
Is now being audited by the ATO.
Oh.
Now, I'm not saying there's a direct link, but the notice came pretty soon afterwards. So,
if it's too good to be true, it's almost always too good to be true. That did bring a smile.
Not that he's being
ordered. I'm not happy that your brother-in-law is in trouble, but I'm...
It's okay, he doesn't listen.
Not in trouble, just being audited. Let's be clear here. This is just the ATO asking questions.
Nothing to hide, nothing to fear.
Correct.
Mate, we better put a pin in this, because we will make this a PPP. Yes,
even for a PS, this has gone for a long time.
Yeah, it has. Until next week, fools. Full on.
Full on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.